Our series profiling young island writers continues. It is The Right Lane, and this afternoon it is Stephen Garrity. Stephen, no stranger to the program, but strange in the content, because we're usually talking to you about computer-related issues.
Yeah, I've been in here to talk a few times about the web development company where I work and some of the other web-based internet projects that I've been doing on. Although there's writing happening in all of those venues, so I don't see this as such a stretch.
I was a little surprised when your name came up with fiction, because I know you really deal in reality, especially with your weblog, the Axe Abolition site that you have as well.
Well, a friend of mine, Melda Gibson, was in here recently, and she used the term creative nonfiction, and that totally resonated with me, because actually some of my friends, if they're listening to me read today, they'll probably recognize a couple of the anecdotes. I mean, it's fiction, but it's based on my experience.
How long have you been writing in a creative vein?
Ever since high school. You know, which how long has that been? Years. Like you mentioned before, some of my other writing projects are web based, internet based, and where the kind of afraid that the internet has eaten my attention span sometimes. And so I try to keep up with the creative writing. You know, it's a longer exercise. It lets you develop ideas a little farther than you do when you're writing for the web.
And I think people have this idea that the web is infinite, but the reality is that, you know, people's attention spans when they're on the internet is very short.
Right? Yeah. A typical piece that I would write for the web would be between 2 and 5 paragraphs long. So, I mean, it's not hard to, and usually also the whole editorial process is different, where it's much more immediate. You come up with an idea, maybe 10 minutes later or maybe a day later, it's up on the web and you're getting feedback on it. Whereas with the creative writing process, it's much more typical that you work on something for weeks or months or even longer and before anyone ever sees it.
So is that part of the attraction for you?
Well, I guess as a break from I very much enjoy the open and the public and the aspect of writing on the web and getting that feedback. But I suppose that there is something to building something and refining it before you show it to anyone. It gives you a bit more of a chance to, I don't know, to create something different than maybe what it originally started as.
So you prefer the fiction genre when you do write?
Yeah, definitely.
What attracts you to the fiction part?
Well, it's I guess it's just write what comes to you, write what you know. And like I said, like we've been talking about, I do a fair amount of writing through my work or through web-based writing, and a lot of it's, you know, technical articles, that kind of thing. So the creative writing is a break from that, and you know, fiction is sort of, I guess, where you go when you need to get away from that.
If you think about the way that writing and you know, you're a computer programmer as well, you do a lot of programming. It's called procedural. In other words, there's a very specific method to getting things done. Do you apply that to your writing as well?
Well, that's an interesting question. I do think that maybe not so much programming directly, but the type of technical writing I end up doing, that definitely does affect creative writing. I think I end up striving for a brevity, a sort of an economy of words that I'm going for when I'm writing, you know, something technical for work. And I think that does probably affect the fiction I'm writing.
Does it go the other way? Are you writing more creative sort of user manuals?
I hope I'm immune.
Because the computer world could use those.
Yeah, I hope I'm writing something engaging for people.
Do you recall the first time that you wrote a piece?
Let me think now. Well, I had written a few things in high school, you know, here and there, just, you know, sort of typical English class stuff. And then I was taking some English courses at UPEI, and there was a creative writing course. And I thought, you know, I think I could do that. I think that'd be interesting. And I pulled up some old piece I had written, and you needed to submit a piece of writing to, you know, to enroll in the course. And it was a couple of years old, and I thought, no, I better turn out something new. And that was sort of the real first time I sat down and decided that, yes, I'm going to write a short story, something, you know, creative, something of myself.
Do you write quite a bit?
I not that frequently, but what I end up doing is I end up working on something. I'm slow. I'm a slow writer. The piece that I'm going to read today is something I started a couple of months ago, and there's still, you know, still only a handful of pages to it, and it'll grow slowly. So it's something I come back to you know, a couple times a week and pick at, and it comes in sort of bursts.
Do you write on your computer or do you use a pen and paper?
I don't think I could read my own handwriting. I haven't used a pen or a pencil in years. So it's all on the computer.
Does that make it easier to change and mess around?
I think so. I'm one of the creative writing professors I had at UPEI. I always used to sort of burn into your mind that don't edit yourself while you write. You just have to write and write and let it come out, and then you can come back and edit it. And it's something I'm bad at. I'm frequently jumping around, and see, I'm a fast typer, but I type with a lot of typos, and I edit myself as I go. So it's hard to know exactly how that affects the final outcome, but I'm sure it does. I'm sure I'd end up with something different if I sat down with a pen and paper.
Tell me about the piece that you brought today.
Well, this is the beginning of... Well, if you ask me what it was, I'd have to say I'm not quite sure. I'm calling it a short story, but I secretly hope that someday it will like turn into a novel or something. But that's a little daunting.
The beginning of something greater.
For now, it's a short story. It's like I said before, it's something I'd call creative nonfiction. It's a fictional character that it's obviously somewhat based on myself and some of my own experiences.
And there are probably going to be some people out there going, hey, wait, that's me.
Well, I warned one of my friends actually before I came in. I said, you're going to hear a few things that were your ideas that you said to me. Thank you very much.
What's the name of the piece?
It's called Deplaning.
Deplaning.
And the title is explained early in the piece. So
here is Stephen Garrity reading as part of our Right Lane series.
Please ensure that you have all of your personal belongings from the overhead compartment before deplaning. Deplaning? That is most certainly not a word. Somewhere, sometime, some kind-hearted soul who loved her family but didn't have the gift of language was given the assignment of writing new flight attendant scripts. It was more important for her to sound smart and make her work seem pay-worthy than it was to explain things clearly to the passengers. So here we are, maybe 20 years later, still stuck with her accidental creation, a new word, deplaning. It's not even particularly short, only one syllable less than leaving the plane. Sitting in the front row of a Dash 8 prop means that the flight attendant sits facing you, uncomfortably close. Fortunately, nothing says closed for small talk like a set of headphones. It's like plugging your brain into some kind of mainframe. You're sitting there, looking straight in front of you, but you can't hear anything. Your mind is elsewhere. The presence of your body becomes insignificant. It's just a slab of meat sitting there. The combination of the disconnection from your neighbors while still being able to make eye contact is disconcerting. Look out the window. Not having flown before, it didn't take me long to slip into the role of hardened business traveler. I'm still just a rookie, though. The real diehards are easy to spot. The lady who asked to be moved to the empty seat in the front row, even though she had a row to herself, presumably so she can deplane before the rest of us. The people in the terminal walking just a little too fast. People who know exactly the size limits of carry-on baggage to avoid checking in luggage. All of us here at the baggage pickup are clearly newbies. A sign overhead reads, "Double check your baggage. All suitcases look the same." That is how signs should be written. The advice proves to be true. I actually have to open up my suitcase to make sure I've got the right one. It's black with wheels and a little extendable handle. It has a tiny padlock that can probably be opened with a pen. Though it does make practical sense, I'm somewhat ashamed to have a suitcase with wheels. Though it boggles the mind to think of the stupid old days when people lugged around luggage without them. My parents bought me this set of cheap luggage when I was in the 10th grade. I've given them the benefit of the doubt and looked beyond the obvious implications of buying luggage for your school-aged child. They were either hard up for a gift idea or the luggage was on sale. My mother's the type who buys gifts without yet knowing to whom she'll give them. She has a closet in the basement full of orphaned good deals just waiting for an occasion. One Christmas, I received a cassette player that I had spotted in the closet before the previous Christmas. It sat in present limbo for an entire year. I'm not complaining about having cheap luggage. You can't tell the difference between the cheap and the expensive stuff. That is, until you try to open mine and realize the zipper is broken. You know, even if you could tell the difference, I'm not sure I want to be seen as one who chooses to spend his money on fine luggage.
Stephen Garrity, reading as part of our Right Lane series, and we'll profile another writer next Thursday, just after 5:30.